Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hey everyone, this is Brad Larson, founder of the Property Management Mastermind. Thanks to our sponsors, we've been able to compile a tremendous list of offers and discounts, with this list expanding every episode. To see that complete offering, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. I also wanted to announce the Pulling Back the Curtain Conference going on in August this year in Denver, Colorado. For more information on that, visit our site for the link. Lastly, be sure to check out our Facebook group page and become a member.
Tenants not changing their air filters? Costly HVAC repairs and unhappy owners got you down? Filter Easy is a subscription air filter delivery service that solves this problem by shipping filters directly to the tenant's front door when it's time to change. Tenants actually change them, which reduces HVAC-related maintenance calls by an average of 30%. Filter Easy's no-cost-you solution functions as a profit center to give you back time and money. Call 1-800-308-1186 today to learn more.
Property Meld is made for maintenance work automation. Property Meld will work to schedule, remind, verify completion, and follow up with your residents automatically, while providing the best-in-class communication system for your ease of use, your vendors, and your tenants. Begin reducing maintenance coordination time and increasing tenant satisfaction today. Learn more at propertymeld.com.
Hey everybody, in today's episode, I've got Kevin Ortner on from the Renter's Warehouse franchise, and we talk about some great stuff going on with what's going on in the market, what's going on with Renter's Warehouse, what's going on with the future someday recession that may or may not happen. It's just a pretty deep dive into what's going on in the property management industry from a guy who's got his head up, looking around, paying attention. So listen up to a great episode. And welcome everybody to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson. And today's guest, I am super excited to have Mr. Kevin Ortner with Renter's Warehouse. Now, a lot of us have heard of this gentleman. We've seen him speak. We've seen some podcasts. I'm pretty excited to have this guy on. He's a high-level dude. And we're going to have a good conversation about kind of the whole of the property management industry. So, Kevin, can you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renter's Warehouse. Super excited to be on the podcast today. Thanks for having me on. For those that don't know Renter's Warehouse, we are a national third-party property manager for single-family homes. We manage about 22,000 homes across 42 markets in the U.S. today. We've been doing this about 12 years. Outside of real estate investing and property management, I've got a wife, two great daughters. One is 17 and one is 9. So when I'm not working, I'm hanging with them, doing the family thing.
Dude, that's a big gap. 17 to 9?
Yeah, 17 to 9, two daughters. So okay. Big gap. I've got one entering to be a senior in high school and one that's going into fourth grade. So dealing with two totally different dynamics.
Well, good thing is you have built-in babysitting, right?
That's right.
Anytime, sure. Day or night, you say, I'm out, you get a babysit. So a little bit about us today. This is a big news for us today. Okay. Mommy finally left the kids at home today by themselves while she went to the gym for like an hour. So this is a big thing. And that was a big thing. I actually had to give them the talk this morning. Like, don't touch the oven. Don't go swimming. Don't answer the door. And so that was a big deal for us today, is just to let the kiddos stay home by themselves. And, you know, they're old enough, you know what I mean? They're self-sufficient. Yeah. But that was the first time she'd ever tried that. She just went to the gym and came back, and I'm sure everything's fine. But, you know, that was
a big day. It's a big day. Congratulations.
Big day. We just finally discovered we knew that. So I'm like so excited because now I can go golfing anytime, right?
There you go. Perfect.
You turd, stay here. I'm going golfing. I'll be on the course.
That's right.
Well, cool. So tell me more about the 22,000 homes in 40 markets. Did I catch that right?
That's right. Yep. 22,000 homes, 40 markets. Most of which are retail investors, right? People who own one, maybe two houses. We do a little bit of institutional work with some of the larger institutions that use third-party management. So about 30% of our total door count is institutional clients that own hundreds or maybe thousands of homes across multiple markets. So that's been a big growth area for us, of course, over the past couple of years. But big majority are still just those one or two unit owners that we've been growing. You know, we really grew the company with and have grown up working with over the past, like I said, almost 12 years now.
12 years. Good stuff. So where do you guys rank on the scale? I mean, are you one of the biggest property management companies around, or kind of where does that scale fit?
Yeah, we are one of the largest. I think real property management, that franchise model is larger than us. And that's the only one that's third party, right? Some of the, you know, Invitation Homes and those guys that, you know, own or operate, a little different business model, right? They're there. But for, as far as third party single family is concerned, we're the largest corporately owned as far as how many doors we manage from a corporate perspective. And then, you know, with our franchises out there, we've got some great franchises across across the U.S. as well. That just adds to our scale. And so behind real property management, we'd be number two.
So let me talk through this. So at one point, you guys were selling franchises, correct?
Yeah.
You stopped that, and then you started to compile them back in or kind of buy some of that out. Kind of tell the synopsis of that story for us.
Yeah. So we started franchising the business in 2011, officially, and started selling franchises. Between 2011 and 2015, we sold 28 franchise offices across the country. So did a ton of franchise sales in about 3.5 years. Big focus of the business. And late 2015, we sold a majority stake of the business to a private equity firm that came in and bought into the business, gave us some growth capital. And part of that, part of the strategy there was to centralize a lot of the back office functions of property management, gain some business efficiencies, and also really build a business that could serve some of this institutional need that was out there and have very consistent processes across markets. The same technology, and really allow one portfolio manager to oversee homes for an institutional client across multiple markets. And that took some changes to our business model a little bit, obviously, to do that. We stopped selling franchises at that time and have since bought back a lot of our franchises as well. So we have 15 franchise offices left. So we've rolled in 13 into our corporate infrastructure. You know, that's been great. We enjoy when our partners are coming back in to join us with our corporate force, so to speak. But like I said, we also have some just fantastic franchisees that remain big offices in their own right. Several that manage well over 1,000 homes, and they're doing great innovative stuff. And we're happy to have them part of the platform and continue to carry the Renters Warehouse, you know, name forward and continue to grow with us.
Yeah. One of the things I would like really talk about is Rich Drake over in Houston. Now, yeah. Rich and I have become friends the last couple of years, and I'm super amazed at how, you know, they're like 1,200, 1,300 homes. They do a great job there in Houston. He's a Renters Warehouse franchise guy, and he's always coming up with new ideas, right? He's always got innovative ideas on how to kind of squeeze more juice out of that lemon, and I love it. We've had all kinds of good stuff. It's about no security deposits. You know, we've gone back and forth about that. We've also, we kind of traded some ideas on what his big event is, his monthly event, which I always tell people is probably the most amazing thing I've seen in property management in the country is Rich Drake's monthly event. And so to paraphrase this, for those that have no idea what I'm talking about, I've been to it twice over there in Houston, and he will get, no kidding, I would say something stronger if it wasn't a rated G show. No kidding, no kidding, he gets 600 to 800 folks in there every month. So let that sink in for a minute. All right. You think you're, 600, 800, whatever. I don't, you know, try to go invite 600 of your best friends to get them to show up. None of them are going to show up. 600 to 800 folks is a packed house, and he does it every single month, gets those vendors in, gets those investors excited, and he becomes the household name. Now, he taught this once at a seminar, I believe it was PM Grow he taught it at. 15 minutes is all he had, but I looked at that, I'm like, wow, and I immediately booked a trip to go visit with him in Houston. We attempted to replicate that here in San Antonio and just really couldn't do it. The magic's not here like it is there. The investor magic is there in Houston. It's not in the San Antonio and Austin market. I mean, there are always investors, but it just seems like with the Houston hitting by a hurricane, foreclosures, oil up and down, it's just like the investor mecca of this up and down trend that creates those opportunities. And Rich has done a great job over there. So I want to give kudos to him. So
I would agree with that. It's an awesome event. And I think it's something people look forward to now on a monthly basis, like marked on the calendar, we're going, they have a great time. They give great education out, great information, great networking. And to your point, it's hard to replicate, right? We've tried some events ourselves, in different markets, and it's a couple things. One, you got to be in the right place. Houston is a great place for real estate investors. It's a unique place, like you said, right? But on top of that, you got to have the right plan. You got to execute on it. And you got to kind of have some of that secret sauce, which the secret sauce is Rich and the guys he brings up on stage and the people that put it together. And then I think the biggest thing is you just got to be consistent with it, right? He obviously didn't start with 600, 800 people, but he started with a big crowd. But he's consistently been doing it for years now. And, you know, I think that consistency certainly pays off with a little bit of Rich Drake magic in there as well.
Yeah, totally. And here's a tidbit from that that people should take away from this. Whether you're doing a big event every month or you're doing a bomb video every 5 minutes, if they endear to you from your personal face, your two eyeballs, they will let you F up more. You can screw up now and again more and still not get fired and not lose a client because they know and they like you. If you are a cold email and a cold phone call 1,000 miles away, the quickest thing that's going to go wrong, they're going to fire you. But if they're like, oh, well, I know Rich, I get to go to his events, or, oh, I know, you know, Amy Ortez over at my office, you know, she does a lot of bomb videos. I've gotten to know her. That endearment of the face-to-face interaction is where people should take that from. If you can't do a 600-person event, fine, but can you get face-to-face, belly-to-belly with those clients, either via video and or some smaller networking event? That's where I think that magic lies. That's where I think where Rich has hit the nail on the head there. What do you think?
I agree with that. You know, that's something we at Renter's Warehouse as a whole, I don't think do well enough yet, right? We've talked a lot about it. How do we get that more personal experience and personal touch and personal interaction with our clients? Because we've got several hundred employees that are doing property management work for us across the country and, you know, another couple hundred leasing agents. And so it's a big organization, but being able to bring that personal touch into it when you're having conversations with folks, being able to do some of the video things and sharing stories about who you are and what you're doing outside of just helping someone manage their home, I think it's hugely impactful. I'm a big believer in that for sure. And it's frankly a place that we haven't really figured out the exact way to do that right yet, but we're always trying to innovate with it, figure it out. I couldn't agree with you more.
I think the bomb is a great method. We've adopted that. And again, I'll give kudos to Todd Breen for making me do it and Scott Brady for making me do it. You know, I looked at it a couple of years ago. I'm like, whatever. But then the more I thought about it, the more interaction I had with getting to know more about it. And well, we've been doing it now for going on 4 months, and we get a lot of positive reaction. Now, this is not meant to be a podcast to talk about BombBomb. Okay, great. But take that little nugget of face-to-face interaction wherever possible. Okay, take that. Now, I want to go to a couple of things I'd written down. We're going to start this off with some innovative things we feel are going to have a positive or negative influence on the PM industry in the near future. So positive and a couple negatives. So positive, one of the things that Rich and I worked on, and you're kind of aware of this because you were brought into the loop, is this no security deposit option influence. And so essentially what we're looking at is a couple different ways to eliminate the security deposits. And you're seeing this in the multifamily space. Rich has adopted it over there in Houston. We've adopted it here in San Antonio. And I think this is going to kind of take hold a little bit more. What are your thoughts on that so far?
Yeah, the no security deposit option, I think is going to be a big deal as more and more companies get into it, figure it out, can expand in a broader base. You know, a lot of them that are out there right now are testing it in different states. A couple of our franchise offices, I know Rich Drake's using it and experimenting with it. We haven't done anything with our corporate offices with it quite yet. As we, you know, there's a few people that are doing it. We want to see who's growing, who's expanding, who's getting to the states that we want them to be in and things like that. But aside from us not using it yet, I've been paying close attention to what's happened with the no security deposit programs that are out there. As you know, there's a couple different ones, a couple different ways that they work. But I think it's really innovative. It's really interesting. And it's going to make it easier to be leasing houses. And I think there's a debate on both sides of, is this going to allow, you know, lower quality tenants to be able to afford to move into the house? Or is this going to attract people who understand they want to be able to keep some of that money in their pocket when they're moving in and what that looks like? And, you know, the jury's probably out, but I think as long as you have the right policies, procedures in place to be able to do that, this is nothing but upside for landlords, frankly, and property managers and ways to make a little extra revenue into your property management business, which I think is important, right? Being able to squeeze more juice out of that lemon, as you said earlier, this is a great way to be able to offer an awesome product to a tenant and stand out from the competition in your market and put some money in your pocket. And I think that's just a win-win.
I haven't talked to Rich in a couple of weeks, but we are seeing as of this year, so here we are in July, we've been doing this now since November. So we have 7-8 months worth of data. We have a 45% adoption rate.
Wow.
45%. And I was hoping for more, but the problem is people opt into it, but our screening criteria is so tough that they don't qualify. and or they don't qualify for the third-party vendor that we've chosen, which is my obligo. So they don't qualify for the obligo, no security deposit option through them, then they just don't get it. So we get a lot of folks that want it, but only 45% are actually leading to executed lease agreements through that no security deposit option. Now, that's still not bad. That's still pretty good. And I think there's secret sauce if somebody were to come in and either one, use a third-party vendor, or two, self-insure. And so I think the self-insure method may be more lucrative, but with anything that is lucrative, there is risk. So you just have to be prepared for that. So my presentation next week at the NARPM Southern States Conference is the no security deposit option. So I'm doing a breakout session, another presentation on it. And I can actually have some real data now that we've been doing this for 7 or 8 months to present to that group. So it's kind of a neat thing that's on the horizon. And I know you guys were touching on it because Rich and I have been experimenting with it. You saw it come out of the multifamily. So, it's just an interesting thing. They seem to be 5 or 10 years ahead of us sometimes, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think that's an interesting point, multifamily piece. I mean, I haven't done it yet, but we've talked about it internally on, I got to get to more of the multifamily conferences, frankly, right? And just to get in the vendor hall and see what vendors are in multifamily and what can we transition over, because inevitably, a lot of the new products, innovation and tech that we feel is innovative in the SFR world, you know, you talk to the multifamily, like, we've been doing that for 10 years. Why didn't you tell me? You know, it's crazy. So there's some great national events for multifamily. We're like, we should just go poke around and see what's there and see what we can bring over. Haven't done it yet, but I think it's really interesting how, you know, we always like to talk about single family is very different than multifamily, or, you know, multifamily guys think they're better, whatever it might be. There's so many similarities what's going on, especially with technology rolling out, and ultimately you can operate these things in such a similar manner. That be able to bring some of those perks, some of that technology, some of those add-ons from the multifamily space into single family. We're just going to keep seeing that more and more. And I think this is just a great example of that.
Now, a couple things there is the multifamily side, they tend to be ahead of us. Now, here's an example. So they've been doing that no security deposit option for 10 years, 15 years, and they were doing bonds. And so I don't want to explain the whole bond thing, but essentially they were just telling the tenants, okay, you're going to spend X, $300, $400 to buy a bond. That's going to be in lieu of your security deposit. And then the bond is a pool and you take the money out of the pool for any fixes, then it runs dry, et cetera. But that's been going on for a while. And really the organization you're looking at is the NAA, the National Association of Apartments. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that would be a good thing. I agree with you. I think I should go poke around one of those conferences to see what else is new out there. All right. So let's switch gears to talk about something else. Let's go. I want to talk about the influence of new capital coming into the PM industry. So essentially that's Wall Street waking up, pulling their head out of the foxhole, saying, holy cow, what's going on with a single family home space? I'm excited. Where can I get in? Where can I put some money to work? So what are you seeing at the big echelon level? What are you seeing for that?
I think the appetite for institutional money, Wall Street money, big banks, whatever it is, to get into the single family industry is bigger than it's ever been. Right. And that's coming out of the real estate downturn when they were spending billions of dollars to buy single family assets. Tons of money still out there. I go to a lot of the institutional conferences, we have a lot of clients in the space. And it's interesting to see year over year over year, the progression of what the conversation is at the conference. And early on, 5 years ago, it was still about, finding the right assets, or it was kind of a combo of, I need more assets and I also need more money. And this really isn't entirely proven out yet. So it's kind of challenging on both. Then it was heavy on operations. How the heck do we operate these things now that we bought them? Then it kind of went back to how do we get more capital to come into the space? And now it's, for the past couple of years, it's been, we got tons of money, access to tons of capital. We need product. We need to be able to buy more homes. Where's it going to come from? That's why build for rent or build to rent is so big right now, building product for these people to buy. But I think what is really interesting now is we're seeing so much money actually starting to go into the service provider side, the operation side of single family rental, whether it's property management companies, whether it's no security deposit options for single family rental or technology platforms for single family rental specifically. And all of those things, I think, is just a wonderful thing for industry because it's professionalizing it a little bit. It's adding some institutionalization to the space in a good way. And it's just bringing attention and credibility to what we're doing, right? I mean, you and I have been managing properties for a long time. And I think you longer than me. But even when I was getting into it, property management, single family property management was a redheaded stepchild of real estate. And what the heck are you trying to manage single family rentals for? And is that really even an industry? Is it a thing? What's going on? And the result of a lot of this private capital coming in or Wall Street money coming in is it's an industry. It's a thing. And people are focusing on it more, which I think just brings more innovation, more technology, more credibility to the space. So for all of us in the property management world, whether we're managing 100 homes or, you know, 100,000 homes, getting more credibility and gaining attention and spotlight into the industry, I think it's just it's a good thing all around.
Crystal ball time. You ready for this?
Yeah.
When's the next recession hitting?
Oh man, I hate that question.
I know.
Crystal ball time. I'm going to say next recession is Q2 of 2021. I'm going to get that specific on you.
Wow. Okay. How did you come up with that?
I feel like I don't think it's going to be 2020. So that's my starting point. I think we got a lot of good things going for us. There's a lot of news hype and media hype around the recession's coming. Bubbles are here to burst, things like that. If you really dive into the numbers and look at individual economic trends and consumer confidence and spending and all those things, interest rates, I think we got a lot of juice left in the tank. But we're also on what now, as of the beginning of July, we're in the longest economic expansion in the history of the United States. And all good things must come to an end. And so I think we get through 2020 without an issue. I feel like we see some sort of slowdown recession in 2021, somewhere halfway through the year. So I'm just going to guess Q2.
Is that kind of along the inauguration of a potential new president? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that too. I think, I don't know if it matters who wins, frankly. I just think that, there's enough juice to get through the next election. I think that the current administration is probably going to do anything they can to make sure that the economic expansion continues to the next election, because it needs to if they have any chance of winning. And after that, there's no telling what's going to happen. I also do think, I'll add to my prediction on that, though, that I don't think the next recession is going to be a big one. I think it's going to be a blip on the radar. I don't think it's catastrophic. I don't think the housing market has massive, you know, declines. I think we see things flatten out, you know, maybe have a few negative quarters. I just don't think it's going to be big, but that's just me. And I'm also not an economist, so don't make any major bets on that out in the marketplace.
Scott Brady told me the other day that they saw a 20% reduction of activity over in the LA area. So he's working in LA, Los Angeles, and their salespeople are like running for the hills. They're all like grasping for whatever they can, 20% of reduction. And anything that happens west obviously comes east. And that's kind of why I asked that question. I appreciate you. That's a fantastic answer, by the way. You just didn't throw something at me with like, well, I don't know what happens, whatever. You actually gave a pretty good answer.
You asked for the crystal ball. That's my crystal ball. And there's a very good chance I'll be wrong. But, you know, that's how I feel about things right now. And I also think for those of us in the housing industry, the housing space, real estate, we got to remember, our clients need to remember that the last real estate downturn we saw was the worst ever since we've been tracking real estate prices. It's never happened before. Even when we talk about the real estate downturn of the 1980s, if you look at the average home price charts, it was flat. It wasn't dipping down. The housing crisis was a crisis among real estate agents who couldn't sell houses because no one could move. No one was buying homes with 20%. I mean, not many people were buying homes with the 20% interest rates that were happening out there. The market was jammed up. But housing values really didn't fall that much. But the real estate agents felt it because no one was moving. No one was buying homes. And I think that's what we'll see more of, is a flat line in home price growth, maybe a small decline. But also we also have to remember, if things do really start to tank and we see a steep line down and to the right, we have all this institutional capital we were just talking about that's going to create some sort of floor for housing prices. It's not going to crash 20, 30, 40, 50% like it did in some markets. It's, you know, a little dip. I think, you know, institutional capital is going to flood in and say, great, we got a price dip. They're hungry for homes at today's prices, let alone a 5% dip, right? Yeah. That's my thoughts.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because we're kind of in the same boat. We're the capitalists sitting on the sidelines, like, when is the dip going to hit? Because we feel like we're ready to go out and snag up a bunch of homes. And we don't even have nearly the capital that those guys in Wall Street do, where they have millions and billions. And they're going to create that floor. Like you said, I think that's a super good point, because they're going to kind of like stop it from going any further. Because if they start to dip a couple percent, 1%, whatever, oh, great, now's the time. Boom, buy, 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 buy. And they're just going to snag it all up. Right. The thing that scares me, and there's a couple things. So we got negatives on the horizon. A couple of them are, one, some sort of weird legislation, right? That's some sort of, you know, state specific, but could be, or even like a national legislation where tenants are now a protected class, like they are in Australia, where you can't do anything, right? You can't evict them. You can't say, you know, boo to them. They are so restricted that you can't even look at them. So that makes me nervous. The other one is, if we do see a decent recession, you see all these, the most dangerous animals out there in the world is a realtor acting like a property manager. So you're going to see all these realtors flood the market of property management saying, I do property management, and they have no clue. And that's going to be dangerous for the industry because they tend to give us a bad name. So let's go really deep on this one. What are your thoughts on further legislation for property management companies, for property managers?
I agree with you. I think it's a big threat to the industry and to property managers and real estate investors, because it's not like new regulation or legislation is going to be landlord friendly, any of it. It's just not going to happen. And it was just this week, New York just voted on a bunch of new, very tenant friendly, landlord restrictive rent controls, eviction things. Like, there was big articles. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I just saw another headline of, you know, New York implements some things like Oregon had just recently done out there in Portland and things like that. So it's coming. It's going to hit the big cities first. It's going to hit the liberal cities, the blue cities first. But like you said, some of those things that start out west or even start on the East Coast make their way across the entire country. I think the biggest threat we'd have is something happening on a national scale. I don't think that'll happen. I don't think the politicians have I don't think they care enough. I don't think they want to use their political capital on something like that. But these small, you know, forget even states doing it. There's just so many small local municipalities that are doing crazy things. And that just complicates our job, not only being more restrictive to how we can handle tenant situations as property managers, but also just frankly, complexities of managing homes. All of a sudden, yeah, I manage homes in Minneapolis, but there happens to be, you know, 18 different cities inside the metro area here that all have different, you know, background screening laws or inspection laws or whatever they might be. It just makes it challenging and it just creates more friction in the organization. So I think the more we can do as an industry and as property managers, real estate investors, and get out and, you know, lobby against these things, you know, the NARPM does a good job of their day on the Hill. I've been to a few of those and talked with some of our national representatives out there, but states, you need to do it at a state level as well. And there's other organizations forming to be a lobbying arm against this stuff. And I think it's important we educate the politicians out there making these regulations and legislation around the importance that single family rentals play to the overall economy, to the overall housing, to affordable housing, to giving people great places to live, and why we need to protect our ability to manage these at a high level to just kind of protect the industry as a whole. So I think it's a really big, important issue, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm proud of what NARPM's doing with the Day on the Hill. I think that's needed. I think they are one heck of a good advocacy group for us. And the more they can do, the better, especially going to the state level. Speaking of state level, so what are your thoughts on more regulation for property managers? More licensing, more requirements, more, you know, education requirements. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that the devil's always in the details, right, with what really comes out in that stuff. But I think that's okay. It goes back to your comment about, you know, the real estate agents in the downturn in a real estate slowdown said, hey, I manage homes. This is going to be great. I'm going to get some money and figure out how to survive until the market picks back up again. That's never good for the industry because this business is harder than people think it is. It's more complex than people think it is. You got to do it the right way to take care of your client, the investor, but you also have a customer, the tenant, and you want to make sure you're taking care of them as well. So I say that because I think education, licensing, and those types of things around property management companies weed out some of the ones that maybe create a tough name for us, a tough reputation that we have to get over in the property management industry. And those who do a good job, professional property managers, you know, people who want to learn and be educated, everyone watching this podcast, they're not going to have an issue going out and doing a little bit of licensing and some education and making sure their staff's up to date. And it's just going to make the industry better. So I'm okay with that so long as, again, the devil's in the details of what it really says and what has to happen there. But if it's education, licensing requirements, I think that's a good thing.
I agree because we've I just sent all of my portfolio managers to the TRLS, Texas Leasing, Texas Realtor Leasing Specialty. It was a designation. So they spent 3 days in class with a very good instructor here in San Antonio. So I had six of my staff members there. And they came back and all said some of the answers from some of these air quote property managers in the local market was comical. You know, how do you approve your applicants? Well, if I like them and they feel good, I just let them go ahead and move in, honey. And we're all screaming, you know, they're screaming, why you can't do that? You know, anyway, that's a whole nother conversation, but I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about one of the things we had more on our list was mentioning the NARPM accounting standards, because, you know, talking with you on this, on the big national level, you looked at this and said, okay, there's very cool, you know, this neat thing called the NARPM accounting standards that came out just recently. And you guys have looked at implementing that into basically across your spectrum. So kind of give me your two cents there on what you guys have done and what you think of that.
Yeah. So full disclosure, we haven't done anything yet. We haven't taken any action, but we've been looking at it hard, and that's something we want to do. We got to get on the list. It's not really difficult either to do, right? It's just where it's going to fall in the priority line of things. But I think it's great that NARPM came together with some people outside of NARPM and said, let's standardize property management accounting and how we all look at everything we do. And again, I think that's just one more step into professionalizing the industry and putting the fact that we can all measure things the same way and talk about things the same way. It's just big, because that's one of the big issues we have in the industry is everyone measures delinquency differently, or everyone measures, you know, vacancy time differently, or how they collect money for this, that, or the other. It's all different. And if we can all start talking standard speak, start talking the same way in the same language, and it all means the same thing, we could actually create true benchmarks for what good looks like, right? And I think those benchmarks are important. It allows us to measure up, to understand if we're getting better, measure ourselves against our peers and challenge ourselves to get better. And it just cleans things up. And so I think it's a great thing that someone came together and did that. And something everyone should look at, dive into it, learn about it, and decide if it's something you want to implement in your business. Like I said, we haven't done it yet. We will. And, you know, I think it's great.
Where we're really going to see the effects is in a year or two from now. So we've implemented it first of the year. So we've been on it now for 7 months. I mean, it's not life changing, but let's say 18 months from now, when you and I want to open our books and compare, and I say, what is your profit per unit? And I say, here's my profit per unit. And I'm like, wow, how do I get to that level? What did you do to get to that level? Because now we say the same things. And we've been beating a dead horse about this for a little bit. But for those out there, I mean, we highly recommend get on the NARPM accounting standard. It's not that difficult. It's a little bit of field mapping, you know, taking X to put it down to B, and just, you know, an accountant can do this for you. And then you can backdate the data as much as you want, or start the first of the year, you know, with clean books. That's probably an easier thing. You guys are probably prepping that to start, you know, in 2020, have clean books with the NARPM accounting standard. So, all right, here's a fun question.
Real quick on that, if you don't mind, I think, and if you're a property management company and you're looking to say, okay, what's my future in this business, or what's my exit in this business, and how am I going to monetize what I've built? If you're someone who wants to exit your business, which there's a lot of them out there, being on some sort of standards that everyone can understand how your company works, how it performs, how to measure success, it's just going to make that, you know, selling your company, having an acquisition happen just that much easier. Because, you know, someone who's bought a lot of property management firms, everyone's books are different. We have to figure out, what does this line item really mean? What is this? How much money are you making per door? What do you charge? You know, just all those questions. And the more and more we, again, get closer and closer to some sort of standard out there, I think it's going to add value to everyone's business, because it's easy for those of us doing it to make decisions and say, yeah, you know, you have an awesome performing business here. Like, we want to roll that up.
Let's define that. Let's take an example here. So right now, today, you have somebody's books you're looking at from, you know, a property management company, and they're not on the NARPM accounting standards. You're not on the NARPM accounting standards. How long would it take you to decipher and come up with a potential asking offer?
Probably a week and a half.
Okay.
Right. I mean, we could do it faster if we needed to, but just kind of normal course of business. We've got, you know, guys in the team that go through and do that. And a lot of that's frankly just from information requests. Like, we need a, you know, copy of the last couple of your P&Ls. But then there's a lot of follow-up coming out of that, because, okay, what does this mean? What's this line item mean? Where's the backup for this? Or, you know, how are you doing that? And a lot of people just don't have some of the information that we need. or don't have it the way we want to be able to see it. So they've got to go back and make it. And at the same time, everyone's trying to run their business, right? So it's like, okay, I'll fit that in tonight sometime and get that information for you. So it's a lot of information requests going back and forth. Once we have all the information, it's easy, right? But it's a matter of getting the information, us understanding what that information really means. And again, going back to if it was kind of standard form, you know, that's just a lot easier, right?
Crystal ball me one more time. So imagine NARPM accounting standards in 3 years and somebody says, hey man, I want to sell. And you say, great, give me these 20 metrics or 50 metrics from your NARPM accounting standards that you're on. How long would it take you to make them an offer?
Day.
Yeah.
Right. Same day, next day, exactly. Because we have, you know, we've got tools and calculators and stuff that we punch stuff into to say, hey, here's an offer range, right? Here's what we could pay for the business to make it make sense for us to add value for our business long-term. That's all we're doing anyway, is we're taking their information and pulling out different metrics and different things out of it, converting it into the way we want to look at it, plugging it into a calculator. So if we had those, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 things that we knew we wanted and we knew what the standards looked like, that's easy. Let me have these things. Let me plug them in. Done. Right. Yeah, so I think that's a big benefit for people as well.
Agreed. Totally. So for the haters out there that say, I'm never going to sell. Okay. Well, what happens when your competitor down the road wants to sell to you and you're the acquiring person? So just listen to what Kevin said. He said, okay, it took them who are professionals a couple weeks, week and a half to actually decipher those numbers and come up with a legitimate offer versus if, you know, if everyone's on the same page, it can be done in a day or a half a day. I mean, it can be done very quickly, but just by looking at a few metrics, you could pump out a legitimate offer. And so that's where I think people are short-sighted, is they're thinking, well, I'm never going to sell, so what do I care? What about when somebody down the street wants to sell to you, and now you have an opportunity to take on 200 or 500 homes to double your business? Yeah. Because that's how acquisitions happen. I firmly believe that, you know, you guys advertise and you want to acquire and you guys are actively doing that. But a lot of times people are just like bumping into each other at an NARPM event. Hey, I'm thinking of selling. You want first dibs because I know you. You're in my market. I like you.
And right.
That acquisition falls in your lap. It just literally, boop, there it is.
Falls in your lap. And look, the accounting standards are a good thing regardless. Just the conversation we just had the last few minutes about acquisitions and understanding people's books better, that's just an added benefit. You should be looking at doing this anyway because it's just, it allows you a cleaner way to look at your business and model success after benchmarks and our peers and collaboration with each other. So there's a lot of good reasons to do it. Otherwise, that's just one, you know, that's kind of icing on the cake.
Choose Seacoast Commerce Bank as your property management bank of choice. Seacoast Commerce Bank specializes in trust accounts and business banking for property managers. One of their best features is a cash analysis program where they can assist in paying your property management related invoices. Contact Allison at 619-988-6708 to learn more. And be sure to listen to the Property Management Mastermind Podcast, episode number 26, about Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Switching gears, what are the Renters Warehouse future plans and growth?
Keep on growing. Our future plans are, look, we want to be the biggest around. And there's no better way to put it, right? So we have our eyes set on 100,000 homes under management. That's, you know, four times the size we are today. I don't know how fast we're going to get it done. We'd like to get it done as fast as possible, but we weigh that with, we want to be a good business also, meaning we want to take great care of our investors. We want to take great care of our tenants. We want to have great performance metrics. And so if you try and grow too fast, you lose some of those things as you scale. So we're trying to do it real smart and find the right opportunities to do it. So some of that's going to have to come through acquisition or mergers of businesses in the space. And it's also just going to be going out and going after, you know, people who need a property manager. And I think, you know, I have this conversation a lot with other property management folks when we're at conferences or when I'm out talking with people. And I think too often all of us in the property management world look at, well, if so-and-so is growing, like that's bad for me because I'm like, I could have got those clients or they're taking clients away from me. It's really actually not a zero-sum game in this world because so many of our potential clients, by so many, I mean, what is it, like 65-70% do it themselves. Like you own one or two homes, 65-70% is the last stat I saw. I can't remember where I saw it, but I finally found it somewhere by a credible source. Do it themselves. So it's up to us at Renters Warehouse and up to us as property managers to create such a great value proposition that they're like, it makes total sense for me to go have someone else manage my home versus me doing it myself and trying to save a little bit of money because I'm going to get higher rents or less vacancy or reduced maintenance expense or whatever the value proposition is you're growing. That's how we look at it. Our competition, so to speak, are do-it-yourself landlords. And we want to create such a great business model and such a high value proposition that we can prove to them the money they're going to pay us to have us manage their home, they're going to save or make up for somewhere else because of our scale, our volume, our processes, and kind of what we do. And so that's the way we look at it, is we're going to go target the, 8 million people, make up a number. I'm trying to figure out the math, right? But 8 million people who manage these homes themselves and say, don't do that. Come over here. Now, obviously, through some of the marketing advertising, people might leave another property manager. We have people leave us for other property managers. That happens. That's business. But I think this cake and this pie is so big for all of us to just create an awesome business and convince people to grow their portfolio and go from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3. And as they do that, they're going to need management. And also just to say, hey, we can help you do so much better that it's really not going to cost you anything and you're going to save all your time. So that's our goals. That's how we want to grow.
Are you guys going to continue the path of radio advertising like you've been?
Yeah, I think so. It still works really well for us. We've actually been doing a little bit less of it as we are diving deeper into some of the new social media stuff that's out there, and internet advertising and digital. But we like the reach it gives us. And frankly, we like the fact that we can really talk to people, our customers or potential customers, about the fact that this option exists for them, right? It's conditioning the market out there to say, hey, you don't have to do it yourself. And I'm sure you know this too. And I'm sure everyone watching knows this, because we all talk with clients and they call and say, man, I didn't even know that this existed for me. I didn't know I could get a property manager, because I thought that was for Warren Buffett, who owns a ton of real estate, or for shopping malls or whatever. The fact that someone manages a home for one guy, one home for one person, like, that's really cool. I didn't really know about it. And it's weird for us to think about, because we've been in the industry a long time, but there still are clients out there that just don't even think about it. They're like, I own a home. I got to manage it myself. That's what's been happening since my grandfather owned the house. Like, that's just how it works, right? And so the fact that we can condition the market, we can get the message out and say, hey, there are alternatives. That's why we like radio so much. And I think, we're going to continue to do it. And hopefully it continues to work well.
And I hope the people listening or that hear those ads, don't be short-sighted on that, because that's actually helping the entire industry. It's creating the awareness. Now, you guys are probably getting, 4/5 of those phone calls, but just having that information being put out there, people start to do Google searches and they're like, oh, okay, I want to call this particular one or that particular one because they heard a radio ad. And so it's benefiting everybody. So, I always get the stuff at conferences. So do you. Oh, that's all they do is radio advertising. I'm sick of hearing them. Yeah. Well, come on. Yeah. They're helping us. You just got to look past that you're, that little bit of jealousy in you. I'm envious because you guys do radio ads. We haven't done any of that here. I don't have the balls to do it. I don't have the capital like you guys, but you guys are doing a great job at that. And I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
If no one's ever told you thank you, I'm telling you thank you right now. So there
thank
it is.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're the first. You're the first one. I'm going to note it down. I'll never forget it, but I'll still write down the date.
Man, that's you should, because that just helps everybody, right? Yeah, yeah. You're going to get leads from it, but so do we. Everybody kind of
absolutely.
Wins.
I'm not going to go out there and tell people that, because that just sounds egotistical that I'm helping everybody out. And that's obviously not our intent, but that's really probably what's happening, right? We get some of the calls. Some people probably don't like what we have to say or how we work. And if we made them interested, they're going to go call someone else. And that's great, right? Because it's working for us to grow our business, and if it's helping the industry as a whole. Again, our goal is to get people to stop doing it themselves, have someone do it professionally, because I think that's the smart choice. And that's what we're trying to do here. And if they end up with another great property manager, obviously I'd rather be with us, but I don't have that much heartburn over it, right? Yeah. Like I want to see all of us who are good grow, right? Because there's a lot of good property managers out there, and I think that just does great things for industry to have a lot of good, successful property managers, right? There can't be one real estate brand in the world. Otherwise, it wouldn't be good. There's no competition, right? And there's not going to be one or two or three property managers either. There's going to be a lot of them. And I just hope the ones that succeed are the ones that are doing the right things and are trying to do right by their clients, their tenants, their employees, and grow in the right way.
All right. So outside of what we've already touched on, name one or two things that Renters Warehouse has implemented at any level that had a huge impact in the last 12 to 24 months.
That is a really good question. You even sent it to me in advance, and I didn't think about it long enough. So this is kind of off the cuff.
I could read it one more time. I got it right. I could read it one more time if you want. I got it right here.
No, it's fine. I think we're like you, right? I don't know you super, super well, but I know people who know you, and we've had some time chatting. You're always doing new stuff and innovative stuff and changing, and that's what we're doing too. So it's hard to pick just one, but I'm going to maybe cop out a little bit, but I really think it's the technology that we've been implementing and trying to leverage across the industry. And some of it we're developing ourselves. So we just created a new property management software in-house based on Salesforce.
Really?
And the reason why that was so great for us is we're just finishing rolling it out now. We've been building it for 2 years, but taken forever. It's the bane of my existence. But now that it's done, we were able to build something that functioned around the way we wanted it to function. And we were able to build technology around what we thought was the right process, rather than what we often do when we're taking third-party software, is make our process fit around what the technology has to offer, right? Which creates so many efficiencies. So we were able to say, best case scenario, perfect day, what should this rent collection process look like? And let's build the technology to do that, right? And so we've built that out, and we're in the process of rolling it out. We currently operate on AppFolio. We're going to be rolling off that here in the next couple of months entirely. And it's been phenomenal. We've seen the time it takes for us to process a maintenance request from the time the ticket's open to the time it's billed and the ticket is closed drop by 35% just by using the new platform. Question there?
Yeah. So tell me, does that have a workflow integration built into it?
Yeah. Yes.
That's the holy grail. That's what everybody wants here. We're trying like hell to implement HubSpot right now. It's been a super challenge. HubSpot and Podio and Asana and all those other cool things that everyone's heard of. That would be the neatest thing ever. That's what everybody wants. I'm so cool. I'm glad to hear that you can perfect it or working on it, because eventually that's going to come out to other softwares, or you're going to sell it to us or whatever to give us that workflow platform we all want.
Yeah. And so I think that was the big advantage of, and that's why we built it on Salesforce, because there's already so much of that functionality built in. We just customized the heck out of it. Took us a long time to do it. But that's the key, right? Everything we do in this business is just another task. So ensuring that task is assigned to the right person right away when it comes in, and that there's a step flow process for it. It sends out communication, everybody involved, like all that stuff. It's really big. Like I said, we're not fully on the platform yet. It's happening now, but that's probably the most impactful thing we've done in a couple of years. We're starting to see the results from it. I think we're going to improve our client experience significantly, because we're going to have pretty robust portals to get online information, you know, real time. Our tenants are going to love it. Our employees are certainly already loving it. They're operating on two platforms right now, so they don't love that very much. But when they talk about, you know, our Salesforce platform itself, they're like, man, this is going to be awesome when we're done. And we should be done rolling that out here beginning of September. So that's pretty exciting. I think it's just going to improve experience, make our business more efficient. So it's a win-win across the board.
Yeah, very cool. So I think one of the things that's impacted us, and this is not just in the last 12 months, but let's say in the last 3-4 years, has been the bringing on of virtual assistants or virtual team members, you would call them, mm-hmm. in different mm-hmm. countries. You know, we have 10 right now employed in Mexico. And so that's been a tremendous boost for our, you know, just kind of our operational method. And once we get onto this workflow platform, like where we really finish the HubSpot implementation, we hope to be able to even use that even more. And I've heard of people talking about taking everything offshore, which is a little risky. I wouldn't necessarily want to do that, because you got to have some folks that need, you know, somebody's got to go look at the darn house, right?
Right.
So maybe you guys are getting into that. I don't want to pry too much there, but, you know, what are your thoughts on that whole offshore labor mindset?
I think it's good. We have a big onshore staff here. Like I said, we've got a couple hundred employees here in the United States, but we employ somewhere around 50 virtual team members out of the Philippines. And it's almost a necessity. If we're going to deliver, and when I say we, our industry, if we're going to deliver the type of service we want and be able to stay on top of all the stuff that's going on and just go through some of these remedial tasks you got to go through and work things through a system, you almost need it, right? Until we can really automate some of the things that can be automated. If you're going to make any money in this business, we all know margins are tight. If you're going to make any money in this business, I think it's a requirement. So I wouldn't outsource everything offshore. I think that's, like you said, probably pretty risky and not possible. But finding a way to integrate that into your business model, I think is a big win. And that's something we started doing about this time last year. So we've been doing it for about a year and seen big success with it. We chose the Philippines simply because they pretty much no language barrier. And by language barrier, I mean, like, you can't even tell they're not in the United States. Like, there's no accent at all, which is great. And so our clients don't feel like they're calling into, you know, India or something like that and getting frustrated that when you're on the phone with the cable company, they can't understand what you're saying, kind of thing. So that was why we went there. I think there's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of companies that provide that service if you don't want to go direct. And so that's probably, you know, that's a great thing to bring up. I hadn't thought of. We're doing that too.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the wave right now. There's several companies out there that are providing good resources to skilled people in other parts of the world. And I think that's a good trend to work on because it allows those PM companies to provide the level of service. So for example, to actually make a real point on it is your frontline phones. They have, you know, for example, we have 2 to 3 people at all times answering our frontline phones. So if they, and I know there's haters out there screaming, well, we don't even use phones. We're smarter than you, right? We just do email and text. Of course, you know, we want to provide a good service to our owners, to our tenants. So yes, we're going to have phones. You can call me archaic and a dinosaur, that's fine, but we're going to have phones. And so they handle those frontline phones for us and can disseminate and even handle most of the calls that come in. If an owner calls in and wants to know about a statement, they can pull it up on the software and read the statement and say, yes, we got you XXX. You know, if a tenant calls in and say, how do I apply? They walk them straight through it. They could even send them a text message follow-up on certain things.
Yep.
So it's just been fantastic for us. I'd highly recommend folks to look into it. And so one of the things I want to switch on is now is, you know, you and I talked about our Property Manager Mastermind Conference coming up in March of 2020 next year. And I'm twisting your arm, trying to get you to go. I got you set up on a mastermind group there. And that's the whole concept of that particular conference is getting to that mastermind environment. So what you and I just did was a mastermind, right?
Yep.
We're trying to get that duplicated into the conference in Las Vegas, March of 2020. And so I'm hoping to see you there. I'm excited to see you there if you're committing to go. And, you know, I think you're going to have a good experience when we get to that point.
Yeah, look, we had just started talking about it this week together. But I think what you were trying to put together with that is awesome. It's going to be great for the industry. Again, I think the more collaboration we have with people who want to collaborate, with people who want to get smarter, who want to do better, who want to get better every day, it's just really good for the industry. There's, you know, 20 million homes out there for rent. Again, we don't need to be so competitive that we're not going to talk with one another. So bringing together the people who want to advance the cause in the same room is just great. And that doesn't happen enough. Especially in the mastermind forum, right? There's conferences and things we go to, but specifically to say, hey, let's go mastermind and let's talk about things and let's share ideas and successes and failures and learn from everybody. I think it's big. So kudos to you for stepping out and being the one that's going to put it together and put it on. And I'm excited to be there. Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Well, this has been fantastic. I thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great episode. I learned quite a bit, lots of notes, and I hope everybody enjoyed out there. So any parting words for the crew out there?
No, thanks for having me on. And like I said, to your point, you brought it up yourself, so I'll repeat it, right? We get a lot of people in the industry like, Renters Warehouse are trying to dominate markets. Like we are, we're trying to grow a business. We all want to be bigger. We all want to grow a great business and build something so big, right? But there's so much business out there that there's room for a lot of us out there. And we're here hopefully leading the charge on some things that others can't do yet because maybe they don't have the same resources that we have. We want to share those things. I ultimately just want this industry to be mature. I want it to be a recognized industry as a legitimate thing. That's why I'm so happy a lot of this capital is flowing into the space like we talked about earlier. And so the more we can all work together and have these conversations and do these masterminds and share knowledge on these podcasts, the better it is. So I'm just happy you provide the platform for us to be able to do that.
Appreciate it. This has been a fantastic episode. Really appreciate you coming on. So look forward to seeing you down in the future. All right.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care.
See ya.
Are you tired of chasing tenants to comply with having renter's insurance? Insurance Management Group can solve this problem with a master tenant's insurance policy. Keep tenants in compliance with your lease agreement and help protect all parties involved. A master tenant's insurance policy can also add an additional revenue stream to your business. Contact Derek Scott at 918-728-8992 or visit imgadvisors.com. To learn more, listen to the Property Management Mastermind Show podcast, episode number 36.
This show is sponsored by the best home inspection software on the market for property managers. We endorse and use Z-Inspector as our software of choice for our team to document home inspections. We particularly like their 360 degrees camera system that produces amazing views of the interior room. Your clients will love Z-Inspector documented inspections you provide them. Visit www.zinspector.com to learn more.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.